Chapter 22. Vort scrambled to the fruit-laden land speeder. He undogged the bolts holding the wooden rack to the bed and gave the whole rig a tremendous shove. The rack with all the crates of spot melons slid backward until almost half of it was out over empty air. He got behind the pilot's controls and had the vehicle in the air before its console diagnostics even admitted that the vehicle was awake. He roared out from under the ambient shroud awning and accelerated all the way to the turnoff onto the children's habitat landing lot. He slewed leftward across the lot. There were people in the way. There were at least a dozen men and women in the lot, most wearing sleepwear, but carrying blaster rifles or pistols. Some were on foot, running toward the building that had been Bindi's target. Others were climbing onto speeder bikes or into air speeders. Vort triggered his running lights, shining brightness into the eyes of the enemy, and cranked his repulsor lifts to maximum. The hauler seemed to bounce as it gained another meter of altitude. Trey had done quite a job in rebuilding the old machinery. Vort shoved the thrusters up to full power and headed straight for the line of speeders now being boarded. The pilots tried to scatter. Some got clear. Most did not. Vort roared over the line of vehicles, his repulsors hammering them down, knocking the speeder bikes flat, slamming pilots down into their seats or onto the pavement. Some of the men and women on foot hit the ground. Others turned and fired. Vort heard and felt an impact as one rifle shot struck home. He slewed a little to the left so that he would not hit the shooters full on. Instead, he grazed them, slamming them into the side of the children's habitat building as he passed. Seconds later, he reached the building. He made the turn onto its eastern facing, decelerating and dropping to boarding altitude in just a few meters. Now he could hear, muffled and distant, a sound of alarms. The building's sliding door was shut. Somewhere during all that maneuvering, he had lost the rack of fruit crates. He hoped it had landed on some of the enemy speeders. He picked up his blaster rifle and hit the control to open the passenger side door. He tried to keep his attention simultaneously on the console's holocam monitors and on the viewports all around him. The building's main door slammed open, not a normal thing for a door of those dimensions to do, and dropped off its metal railings. It fell to the ground, barely missing the speeder's rear panel. The individual who slammed it open from within, a Wookiee. Fur a light brown in the overhead light, wearing a weapons bandolier with a bowcaster hung from it, glowered at Vort. Vort kept his grip on the rifle, ready to aim. But then Scut ran out of the building, past the Wookiee, and hurtled into the landspeeder's bed. Neither he nor the Wookiee reacted to the other. Vort slid open the rear viewport of the pilot's compartment.
"Be ready to return fire from the other building."
Scut nodded, scrambled to the rear of the bed, and readied his rifle. Jesmyn, emerging from the building, trotted past the Wookiee as though she hadn't seen it. She leapt onto the speeder bed and took up position beside Scut. Wraiths and strangers began cresting the lip of a square gap that dominated the building's floor. They ran to the speeder, most of them piling into the bed. Trey carried Termin, whose hand motion suggested he thought he was directing an orchestra. Trey saw the blaster damage to the speeder's front panel. He shot forward a hurt look before boarding. Vort saw a curly-haired human man, a dark-skinned man with a late-model sniper rifle and a hip cloak, a male Duros he did not know. All boarded the speeder. Bindi and an angular light-haired man emerged. They clambered into the pilot's compartment, the man in the center seat, Bindi on the far side. She shut the boarding door, and still the Wookiee waited where it stood.
Vort looked at Bindi.
"Go?"
"Not yet. Piggy!"
That was the angular man. He sounded surprised. Vort stared at him.
"Char?"
His one-time teammate smiled.
"How did she recruit you? I thought you'd never come back. I didn't even think to try."
"It's Vort now, not Piggy."
"Right now it's Seven."
Bindi spoke through clenched teeth as she stared back past the Wookiee into the building's interior.
"Come on, come on."
Behind Vort, someone opened fire with a rifle. Obviously, targets were in range and in view. Finally, out from the doorway came two more men, a Deveronian and a Duros. They were drenched with sweat and staggering from exhaustion. The Wookiee went into action, helping them to the speeder, lifting them into the bed. Then the Wookiee jumped on just behind the cab, facing forward.
Bindi nodded, satisfied. Now! Her head snapped back as Vort hit the thrusters. There was no tremendous thump from behind. The Wookiee must have known to hang on tight. Vort steered them out over scrubby terrain, not yet heading back toward the road.
Where to, leader?
He had to raise his voice to be heard over the sound of the suddenly straining thrusters and repulsors. Bindi and Char both started talking at once, then glowered at each other. Vort tried again.
Bindi? Destination? There will be pursuit from the other building. I can't have wrecked all the speeders there.
And from below, when they get the lift topside with vehicles we didn't wreck.
Bindi sounded disgusted.
I'm thinking. We're probably under satellite observation now. We need to get somewhere we can mix with crowds and traffic. Really fast.
Really fast?
Vort glanced at his sensor board. It didn't show any pursuit yet.
You're talking about over 100 kilometers. We're in the boondocks, Bindi.
What's the next broken terrain?
Foothills start nearby. Real mountains a little farther on.
Bindi made an unhappy face.
That might work, but we don't know those mountains. Unless...
She fixed Char with a stare.
You do.
He shook his head.
We haven't had time to scope them out.
There was a beep from the sensor console. Vort saw 2 blips, then a third, back near the roadside building. There was another blip far ahead, from the vicinity of the village.
We have pursuit, and 1 incoming from ahead.
All right. Mission objective first. We get the data to the authorities now. If Thul knows it's all over for him, he may decide not to add killing us to the list of charges.
She craned her neck to look back through the viewport.
4, transmit all our recorded data. All comm channels, maximum strength, so they can't possibly contain it.
Char added, shouting.
3. My 3. Do the same. In fact, you 2 patch your files together. Give them a big data dump.
Bindi, still looking backward, craned her neck.
I see them. The pursuit. 2 airspeeders, 1 swoop. We can take them.
Vort shook his head.
See how they're hanging back. Their job is to pace us, not let us out of their sight. So we can't duck into a ravine somewhere and be gone by the time the real pursuit arrives. Which it will.
Char kept his eye on the sensor board.
Bindi, we need to set down, scatter, and hide out until the broadcast brings the authorities in. Cob frequencies are being jammed!
That was someone in the bed. Vort didn't recognize his voice. He thought it was the young man with curly hair. Char gritted his teeth.
Never mind.
Now the distant pursuers began shooting. Blaster fire flashed across night-black fields and stands of trees, hitting soil or plant life near the landspeeder. The shooters seemed to have little accuracy, but Vort began a series of minor course corrections to throw them off. Nor were the wraiths and passengers having much more luck returning fire. They were obviously being bounced around too much to get an accurate aim on any of the pursuers. Bindi looked back.
4, what was that historical sign again?
Trey left off firing, turned to shout forward.
Mountainless Meteorological Station. Defensible? Deep under stone at the mountain summit. I'm guessing it's defensible for a while. Maybe.
Miri left off firing, too. She pivoted and clambered her way forward. She gripped the viewport's rim with both hands to stabilize herself and leaned in past the Wookiee's furry legs.
If things are hopeless, I have an idea.
Char nodded.
Definitely hopeless.
Bindi glared at him, but answered Miri.
That's more than I have. What is it? Get us behind cover and slow down just for a second. I'll drop off and hide. If I can get clear of the jamming, I can transmit a call for help from one of my personal assets. I'm talking about a full-strength extraction force. I think it'll get here pretty fast, a few hours at most. We'll do it. You get clear and send your message. If your asset can't help but doesn't reply, then transmit all our evidence data instead, and we'll hope that it does some good. Done.
Bindi pulled out her datapad, opened it, brought up a map.
Here's where we are. Here's Mount Liss. Let me switch to topological view. There.
She pondered for a few moments.
All right, Vort. Up ahead is a drop-off. Make for it. Once we get on the other side, we'll be out of their direct sight for a few seconds. Slow down so we can drop off a unit. As soon as they've deployed, turn to course 315 and make for Mount Liss.
Understood.
Bindi turned to Miri.
You take five. She'll get you through. Shaw, on your team, who's best with rough terrain?
Huhuna. That's our Wookiee. Kinetic artist with first-rate wilderness skills. Who's going with her?
I am.
The hell you are?
I have a plan, so shut up. Give Huhuna the order.
Shaw scowled, then stuck his head out the viewport.
Huhuna! Prepare to jump when we slow down. You're Bindi's wingmate.
Vort heard an answering rumble. The Wookiee didn't sound happy. Vort wasn't happy either.
Bindi, you're a planner, a trainer. You need an infantryman for this. I've done it before. I should go.
No backtalk, Vort. This is woman's work. Time?
30 seconds until the ridge. This is not a good plan.
She merely looked back through the viewport.
Somebody pass me a rifle.
One came forward. Miri handed it to her.
10 seconds.
Vort kept his eyes on the sensors, saw the ground ahead simply end. He raised his voice in a bellow.
Hang on!
Then they crested the ridge. The land speeder was canted downward. It was a steep slope, 40 or 45 degrees off horizontal. Vort let off the thrusters. He disengaged the automatic levelers on the repulsors, revving the port side repulsors and reducing power to those on the starboard. As the land speeder began to tilt to starboard, he slewed into a rightward turn. The repulsor thrust kicked up a tremendous cloud of loose stones and dirt, driving it before them as if the speeder were a giant broom. The land speeder half flew, half skidded down the slope, its left side now its leading edge as it slid. The speeder's bed remained almost perfectly horizontal. They hit the bottom of the slope and slid leftward another few dozen meters, but had no forward thrust left. Vort adjusted the repulsors, brought them level again. The rear thrusters began to put the speeder in forward motion again. Vort's second bellow was as loud as the first.
Jump! Jump! Jump!
Bindi went out the starboard passenger door and was lost to sight in the darkness. Vort felt the speeder's load lighten as three in the back also bailed. Then the vehicle began to get up to speed again. Shar scooted rightward, grabbed the door and yanked it shut. Then he grinned over at Vort.
You're still pretty deft at the controls, aren't you?
Vort glanced at his sensor board.
More contacts. Some big ones from the installation. What did they have down there?
Artillery.
Stang. Navigate us to this meteorological station, would you?
As the land speeder roared off to the southeast, Bindi sprinted southwest along the ridgeline, Huhuna lumbering along behind. Bindi could hear the footsteps, punctuated by clattering rocks, of Jesmyn and Miri running northeast along the ridgeline, directly away from them. Bindi could also hear oncoming speeder thrusters. She didn't turn to look. A single misstep on this rough terrain could leave her with a broken leg. She simply shouted,
"As soon as they crest the ridge, we separate! When they spot our speeder, they'll turn to follow, and we'll present their flanks to us."
Bindi's command of the Wookiee language was not impressive, but she understood Huhuna's rumble of agreement. It took only 30 seconds. Then the roar of pursuit became very loud. Bindi took up position behind a line of knee-high stones. Huhuna, faster when not hampered by a human, got up to full running speed and was 30 meters ahead, behind an outcropping of boulders, when the first pursuing land speeder crested the ridge. Bindi braced her rifle on the rock before her and tracked the speeder, a white closed-top model with at least two rifle bearers inside. It roared down the slope, kicking up its own cloud of dust and pebbles. Just before the ground leveled off, it began a rightward turn in pursuit of the wraiths. Its maneuver had none of the grace of Vort's, but the speeder remained upright through its turn. Behind it, a red speeder bike piloted by a stocky blonde man in rumpled white clothes topped the slope and roared down in the speeder's wake. Bindi switched her aim to target the speeder bike, leaving the land speeder to Huhuna. She tracked the speeder bike, led it, and squeezed the trigger. Her bright blaster bolt hit the vehicle's rear thruster array. Bindi saw the speeder bike's tail end slow toward the left, then the pilot lost control. The speeder rolled down the slope, its front strut hitting stone, and the vehicle began to come apart while still moving at better than 200 clicks an hour. There was a loud report from behind Bindi. She turned in time to see the lead land speeder slew to the left, a gaping hole spilling black smoke low on the vehicle's right side. Huhuna had made her bowcaster shot count. The land speeder did not crash, but it was definitely down for the count. Bindi watched as its pilot managed to slow it expertly and bring it in for a skidding, slewing, yet successful landing. There was still more noise coming. Bindi swung around and aimed at the spot on the ridge where the previous two vehicles had crossed. The next speeder, a silver-gray open-air model, crested the ridge about 30 meters north of that spot. Bindi lowered her rifle's aim to compensate and fired, but her shot plowed into the stone of the ridge. Then she tracked the speeder as it descended and began a gentle arc to the right. She glimpsed three humans in it, two in the front, one in the rear, and saw the rear passenger turn his own rifle barrel toward Bindi. He fired! His bolt went high, flashing over the ridge crest. As the speeder reached the bottom of the slope and banked rightward, both passengers began to fire at Bindi. Rapid and badly aimed shots that still converged on her position. Closer, closer, too close. She went flat. Sharp stones dug into her chest and ribs, and she was grateful for the padding offered by the ambience suit. Two shots flashed over her body and hit the slope just above her. There was a minor explosion from that vehicle. Daring, Bindi raised her head to look. The gray speeder was slowing to land, a hole suited to a bowcaster in the right flank. Its pilot and passengers, two men and a woman in civilian dress, rolled out over its top edge, landing on the ground on the vehicle's far side. They took shelter behind it and continued returning fire. Bindi hissed to herself. It was good news, bad news. The constant state of life in Wraith Squadron. Her plan had succeeded brilliantly so far. All three vehicles were stopped, and the other Wraiths should make it to Mount Liss. But there were now five. No, six. She now saw that there had been three people in the white speeder. Pop dogs arrayed against two Wraiths, and more were on the way. There, a man from the gray speeder sprinting north toward the slope to Bindi's left. It was the enemy's first attempt to flank the Wraiths. Bindi shot him. She wasn't sure where her bolt took him. In the ribs, she thought. She was sure that the runner fell and stayed down. Five pop dogs to go. There was a scream from the white speeder. Bindi glanced that way, saw that the speeder was smaller than it had been before. Huhuna appeared to be taking it apart with methodical bowcaster fire. A man sprawled behind, on his back, smoke rising from his chest. Four to go. But now more roaring was audible, both from the west and the northeast. In the latter direction, in the distance ahead, Bindi could see a brown air speeder cruising at an altitude of about 200 meters. It wasn't headed her way, but off at an angle toward the right, toward Vort's even more distant speeder. And the noises from the west were mixed. Shrill speeder repulsors and a deeper rumble. Something big was approaching. Another shooter behind the gray speeder opened up on Bindi, firing rapidly, carelessly. Bindi crawled a few meters to her left, and the shots did not track her. They continued hammering on the stones near her original position. She peered through a gap in the stones. The female trooper from the same vehicle ran in the direction the first had taken. Bindi fired at the runner once, twice. Her second shot took the runner in the thigh, throwing the woman to the ground. Three to go. Fewer, if Huhuna had managed to tag any of the other pop dogs behind the white speeder. Bindi ducked as the sniper offering covering fire from the gray speeder targeted her new position. His shot slapped into stones, superheating them, only centimeters from where she lay. Then the enemy fire stopped. Things fell almost silent as Huhuna stopped shooting too. Now there were only the repulsor whines and rumbles from oncoming vehicles. Bindi raised her head to peer over the stones. She could hear little gasps of breath from the woman she'd shot. But nothing moved. Nothing but a pebble clattering down toward her from above. Bindi rolled onto her back, brought up her rifle. Meters above her, at the top of the ridge, stood the silhouette of a man with a rifle. He fired! She fired! Simultaneous with the kick of the rifle against her shoulder was a kick to her gut. She saw her enemy fold up around his rifle. He collapsed and fell, rolling down the slope. He fetched up against stones only 2 meters away from her. Bindi looked down at herself. Steam rose from a hole in her midriff. Funny that it wouldn't hurt.
And then it did. Pain shoved its way through her like a hydraulic ram, forcing a moan from her throat. She tried to call Huhuna's name, but all that emerged was a low wail.